we've written a pastoral letter on the issues of freedom of conscience and of religion. We have issued it to the people of Canada, not to any government in particular, but we've issued it, first place, of course, to our own people, but at the same time to all people. And what has occasioned it is what has been observed not only by us, but by many, of course, over the years, of the various threats to, or indeed sometimes overt attacks upon, both of these fundamental human freedoms. So, for example, internationally, we've seen the horrific attacks in Egypt, the massacre of Coptic Christians, or the terrorist attacks on Christian churches in Nigeria. There's the issue of the persecution of the Catholic Church in China, and all of these things. But we also notice in our own country far more subtle challenges to freedom of conscience, freedom of religion. Certainly, thanks be to God, not the violence here, but challenges nevertheless, such as, for example, when a state marriage commissioner wants to object on the basis of conscience to presiding at same-sex wedding, often that person is forced to resign, or sometimes colleges of physicians will pressure their members who morally object under their freedom of conscience to, say, performing an abortion. They'll feel pressured to refer their patients to others who will, or pharmacists that feel pressured to give oats medications that might have, for example, abortifacient effects. These are all attacks on freedom of conscience, and if these are motivated as well by religious conviction, they're attacks on religion. We see freedom of religion challenged when Catholic schools, for example, may be pressured by the state to introduce particular practices in response to one of a number of given issues that might be or would be counter to the teaching of the Church. I mean, the Church is free, and Catholic schools must be free within their own ambits to do what they do in accordance with the Church teaching. And when the state presumes to interfere with that, that's a violation of religion. The essential point, a couple of essential points to keep in mind, is that these are inherent human rights. They are not granted by the state, therefore they cannot be taken away by the state, but must instead be honored and protected by the state. Where this does not happen, we feel impelled to speak. Our own Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, in fact, upholds these as fundamental human rights. Indeed, among the list of fundamental human rights listed in our charter, first are freedom of conscience and freedom of religion. However, that doesn't seem to be particularly effective of late in actually bringing about effective protection. So we want to raise the question. We want to say to folks, these are fundamental principles. They must be protected. We need to understand conscience correctly. We need to form it. We need to work towards having healthy church-state relations based not on a radical secularity, but on what we could call a legitimate one, wherein the political sphere, the religious sphere, are recognized as having autonomous spheres of action. One does not run the other. But they do intersect in that our common life together and our political life can never be separated from morality or ethics. That's where society does need the religious voice to offer very, very important insight. The effective functioning of a democracy is absolutely dependent upon protection of fundamental human freedoms. That includes freedom of conscience and freedom of religious expression. So for the sake of the common good, and for the sake of protecting those who find their rights are being challenged, the bishops felt it necessary to speak by issuing this letter.
And Archbishop Smith, Canada certainly has a reputation for being very tolerant and very open and very diverse. Can you give us a little bit of the context? You know, how does your call as the Canadian bishops fit into Canada's history and general national consciousness of diversity and openness to different ideas and different opinions.
I have to say the history of church-state relations in the country generally is pretty good. And the response of our Canadian society to the religious voice varies depending upon the issue. So, for example, if as a legitimate expression of religious freedom, we work among the poor, we house the homeless, we set up systems of health care, our Catholic hospitals, where we set up systems of education and where we are trying to help the marginalized, that's when society looks to the church and praises it and recognizes in an immediate way the importance of having the religious voice for the common good. On the other hand, though, when the church, again in fidelity to its mission, will challenge the status quo by speaking, for example, in defense of the right to life, from fertilization to natural death, speaking in defense of traditional marriage, and challenging prevailing opinions that are counter to the gospel, then we find that the reaction is the opposite. And that's where we start to hear comments like, you know, freedom of religion is really just freedom of worship, so keep your comments to yourself, confined to the home, confined to the church. It ought not to have any bearing upon formulation of public policy. It ought not to enter into, you know, commonly called the public square. But it's there precisely that the bishops want to remind the country that the full gamut of the church's insight and of the insight of all people of faith needs to be brought to bear upon common society. We're not saying, obviously, that we want to walk through the halls of our parliament quoting the creed or waving the Book of Canon Law, but we have a 2,000-year tradition of prayerful reflection upon the human condition that has given rise to wonderfully beautiful, hope-filled insights that, for the sake of the good of our brothers and sisters with whom we live in fundamental human solidarity, we want to contribute. So insights into the dignity of the human person, recalling to society that the human being, in virtue of the way in which we have been created, is open to the transcendent, has an eternal destiny. Our insights into the nature of family and how that needs to get protected. Our insights with respect to social justice. Our insights with respect to the principles that need to be brought to bear on the healthy or the functioning of a healthy economy for the good of all. These are all issues that the challenge prevailing methods of thought. They're insights that come from our faith tradition, from our religious beliefs, and really do and must intersect with the common discernment of society for the sake of the common good. And if these insights forged within a religious sphere are cast to the side and silenced, then our entire society is greatly impoverished as a result.
And then the next question is, what are you hoping people will take away from this? How do you expect or hope that people, not just Catholics, but Canadians generally, how do you hope that they will respond to this letter? And what do you hope that they will do with this message that you've given as the Canadian Bishops' Conference?
Well, in terms of Catholics, first of all, I would want them, I would hope, that they will take some time and make sure that they understand what conscience is. And then I think it's important for our Catholics to understand that these are fundamental human rights, that they ought not to be afraid to speak up in their defense, and where the right to conscientious objection is being threatened, also to speak up. For society generally, I would hope, well, as I mentioned in my first point with respect to Catholic response, I would hope that we take the time and really ponder what we mean by conscience. One of the difficulties today, it seems to me, is that we no longer understand what conscience is. It seems to be operating in many people's minds and lives at that rather hazy level of subjective feeling. But conscience is a capacity within the human person whereby we freely discern what is morally obligatory. Conscience is not licensed to do whatever I want. And as a human capacity, much the same as we have the capacity to speak or to think, yet these capacities need to be developed and trained and formed, so too does conscience need to be formed. So let's understand what conscience is, first of all, and let's make the effort to form it properly so that by exercising our right and protecting our right, we live not only fully as human beings, but also in a way that does contribute to the well-being of our brothers and sisters for the sake of the common good.